this morning, Mark Yurk is going to share his testimony with us, and he's been kind enough to come to Freeman and be with us today. So, Mark, welcome, and thank you.
Bethany Church here in Freeman. I always look forward to coming out each year and sharing with you. This year, at this time, I would normally talk about our freedoms and the freedoms we have and the freedoms we enjoy and the responsibilities that go with them. But I was led in a different direction. And I haven't done this for quite some time. And that's just give my personal testimony. And so today I'd like to share that a little bit with you. I'd like to start with, if folks don't know me, I'm from Sioux Falls. I am the director of Hope Prison Ministry. And I've been the director of that ministry since 2012, I believe. That ministry works with men and women that are coming out of prison to get their lives reestablished, to get out there and get jobs and housing, food and clothing. When men and women leave prison, they get $50 and they get a set of sweats. And they put them on the streets and they say, you need to go out, you need to find work, you need to make it. The recidivism rate is 68% plus that men and women that leave will return to prison within 1 year of being released. were not very good odds. And I know this because in 1980, I left prison. I was 20 years old. I'd served in terminology of an inmate, I served a nickel, which is 5 years for first degree robbery. So today I'm going to kind of tell the story that led up to that. I'm going to kind of try and lead you as to how I learned to walk with Christ. And I hope that in the story you see there's peaks and there's valleys. We all walk through the peaks. We all walk through the valleys. One of the scriptures that stands out to me so much is Psalms 121:5. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm, and He'll watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore. That scripture fits right into my life. You see, I grew up most of my life in Sioux Falls. I was abused. I was in foster homes. I had an alcoholic father, stepfather, because my real father died when he was 28 years old. I was just in kindergarten. But my stepfather was abusive, and my mother was abusive. So I was in and out of foster homes for a while, and it just wasn't a good thing. I remember being abused until I was in about the eighth grade when my mother left that particular person and went on her own, and then there was still abuse, but not quite as bad. At 14, we moved to Monroe, South Dakota, on a little farm. And I started working on the farms and the fields and doing whatever. And my mother always needed money, so it would go to her. And that's the way it was. And right before I turned, I was probably 14 and a half. I went to the Turner County Fair at that time. And I helped set up rides, and I was a ride jock, as they'd called them. And so I would go and help set up before the show started, and then tear down after the end of the week was done, and we'd move on to the next town. And I started there, and then they offered me a job and asked me to travel with that show as a carny. It's a glorious life, I have to tell you. My mother just said, go and, you know, good luck to you. And I made about $120 a week. I slept in the truck. I took showers in a swimming pool in whatever town we were in or whatever. And you would do that. You would work from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2 or 3 o'clock the next morning. And then if you were tearing down so you could move to the next town, you were running 24 hours a day. And that was probably my first introduction to drugs and alcohol. It's a little known secret that carnies, they use pot, they use pills to stay awake, they use alcohol. I got into it. And I was with them until the end of the show. The end of the show was in Mitchell, South Dakota. So I was with them for probably another 3 months. And I left them in Mitchell. I returned home, and things were just not good. We moved into Parker, and I said, I'm done. And I went to Canastota, where I had a sister. And I lied about my age, and I got in and worked at a nursing home. And That was great until about December, and I had just turned 15, and they found out that I wasn't 17 as I said I was, and they gave me the boot. So they gave me a check and said, "You're on your way. Your mother's been called, and she's going to come pick you up." And fortunately for me, there was a blizzard that night, so she couldn't get in. So while she was making plans to come and get me the next day, I was making plans to get out of town. I was done. I wasn't going to live at home anymore, and I didn't. The next day, the blizzard was over, and I had a friend get me into Parker, South Dakota. I stayed at the motel there. Nobody even knew it. The next morning, I took off. And if you're younger, you don't probably know about hitchhiking. I rode my thumb from Parker, South Dakota, down to Cozad, Nebraska. I worked there for a while. And then I took off for Miami Beach. Don't ask me how I picked Miami Beach. It was just something I seen on TV, and I said, "I'm going." I didn't have fears or anything. I just wanted to get away from the life that I had. I wanted to get away from the abuse. I wanted to do better than what I was used to. You know, when you grow up on welfare and not having clothes and not having money, it's hard. And as you get older, it's even harder. So my thing was to just get out of there. So I took off and I started hitchhiking. I went to Cozad, worked for a while, got a little money up, and I hit the road again, hitchhiking. And then I made it all the way to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I ran out of money, and I ended up in juvenile detention center there. I turned myself into the police. I was kind of savvy even then, because I knew if I wanted food, if they put me in jail, they had to feed me. And that's what happened. I went to juvie in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I was there for about 2 weeks, and they had called my mother who knows how many times, and she said, "You know what? He's just going to take off again, so let him go." And I did. They let me go, and a few days later, I was in Miami Beach, Florida, got hooked in with the Salvation Army. Cost me 50 cents for a bed and a shower, and the guy at Salvation Army said, "I know where I can get you work, and you just got to be up early in the morning and get ready to go." So I did that. The next morning I got up, and there was a bus outside the Salvation Army, and they were loading guys up, and they said they were going to Hollywood, Florida, or they just said Hollywood, excuse me. And I jumped on the bus, and I thought, well, I'm going to go pick tomatoes in Hollywood. I'll probably meet some movie stars, and who knows what's going to happen then. Little did I know that there's Hollywood in California. There's also Hollywood in Florida. And their tomato fields there are as big as our cornfields in South Dakota. So I would go out there from about sun up to sundown, and I would pick tomatoes. I got 40 cents a bushel. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. It's a lot of work, because I know at the end of the day, my hands were eaten raw from the acid of the tomatoes. But here's what happened, another lesson learned in life. And this goes back to, this is how God watches over you all through your life. I got on the bus, and I headed back. They were going to take me back to Miami Beach, Florida. And we get there, and I'm going to get off the bus, and they pay you right there in cash. And they start dealing out what they owed me. But what they failed to tell me is I had to pay for the ride to Hollywood. I had to pay for the bologna sandwich they gave me for lunch. And then at the end of the day, whether you're old enough or not, you got a bottle of Mad Dog 2020. By the time I was done with the work that day, I made $4. It was a hard lesson. But you know what? I kept doing that for almost a week. And finally, my buddy Ben at the Salvation Army, he said, "You know what?" He said, "I think I got you another job." And he must have liked me. He got me in at the Tides Hotel on 12th and Ocean Tribe. it was great because it's right across the street from the ocean. So I would work from about 7 until noon, and then I could be done, and I'd go swimming over in the ocean. I'd come back, I'd get my one free meal a day, and I'd wash dishes till 7, and I'd head back to the ocean. Not only did I go into the ocean, but I also needed a place to sleep. The Salvation Army was now 4 miles back, and I wasn't walking 4 miles day and night. Another lesson learned. They got life shacks all the way along the beach, so I thought, well, I'll just climb under one of them, and I'll sleep there, and I'll be fine. Sure as a dickens, I started to crawl under there, and there's a big boy stood up. He's about 300 pounds and 6'3", and he just told me, don't come back here again. It was his house. So I went back, and I found somewhere else to sleep that night. I ran into another guy the next day, and he said, come with me, come with me. And he was, I don't know, there just something wasn't right. So at 15 years old, I was about 80 pounds. But I always knew if something didn't feel right, how to run. I was a good runner back then. Now I couldn't run to the back door without being caught. But back then, I could run, and I got out of there. Luckily, the owners of the Tides Hotel said, look, we're going to do this for you. In the basement of the hotel where you wash the dishes and that, they also had a room where they kept veggies and that. They were nice. They put a cot down there next to them vegetables. And that's where I slept for about a week. Then I got in with somebody else, and I became the adventure of a lifetime. I got in at that time, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. I'd only ever heard of them. It was in Miami Beach, Florida. I went with Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. I was with the 108th edition. I got on the train. I would sell snow cones for a quarter, and I'd get a commission off them. I paid $7 a week for my bunk on the train. But through that time, I seen 22 states. I seen things I would never see at 15. Most guys had only dreamed of it. I traveled with acrobats and aerobats, and I'd watch them walk on, they'd walk on top of the train. It'd be going 100 miles an hour, and they're up there after they've had their bottle of vodka, and they'd be walking on that train and just doing whatever they do. It was amazing. And of course there, I got into alcohol too. Because if you lived on a train, you drank like the rest of them, and I could drink vodka straight up. It was a tough one. Anyway, we got through all that. I never did come back home for any amount of time. I'd stop once in a while. My thing was to keep going. And so I went back to work. I was in COSAD for a while. I went into the service. I was in the Army. And then I was there for a time, and then they discharged me for my bad knees. And that's when I think I really hit rock bottom. Because I came out of the service, I had no hope. I lost hope. That was my answer to everything when I went into service. They would get me out of anything. But I lost hope. And I got to drinking. I got to being foolish. I got with the wrong people. And then the next thing I know, I had a group of people thought it was funny to just drive me out in the middle of nowhere and leave me in a field. I was over by Vermilion, South Dakota, or Vermilion Lake, excuse me. And I, being as savvy and smart as I was, I stole a tractor. And I drove the tractor back to Parker, South Dakota. And then I robbed someone. Now, if you're going to rob somebody, folks, and most of you don't look like you're going to rob anybody today, be smarter than I was. Because I robbed them for $10.02. That will haunt me for the rest of my life. But as God says, He'll be with me through my walk in life. And He was. Because at that time, I ended up going to Olivet for my crime. Went to court. They gave me 5 years. That was devastating. I remember I cried and I cried all the way to prison. I thought that was the worst thing that could happen to me. In reality, prison became the best thing that happened to me. Because in prison, you can't run from your problems. You have to face them. It was there that, first of all, I learned to stand up and defend myself, because otherwise I was a runner. But I learned to fight, because if I didn't, I had other problems coming. But I also got involved with church. I knew about the Catholic faith because I remember my mother saying I'd been given last rites because I almost died. So I got into the church at prison. I met a gentleman by the name of Father Ed Pierce, who would become very big in my life. He was an ex-professional wrestler. Before he was a priest, he was a wrestler. But he didn't judge me. He didn't try to change me. But he would sit down and listen to me. And he would talk with me. And he showed compassion. And he showed me that there was more out there. And he showed me that there was a God that loved me. That was huge for my first step into Christianity. By the way, I'm non-denominational now. I did have to part ways with the Catholic Church. I went to confession. I went to a thing called Curcio, which is a retreat. And one of the things you have to do in there is do confession with, at the time it was Bishop Dudley. So I went in and I started doing my confession, and I could have probably been there for about 8 hours. And when it was done, I could have been doing Hail Marys for about 6 months. And I said, wait a minute, I can't do this no more. So I did leave the Catholic faith. I still talk with Father Ed Pierce from time to time. I love him. I love Bishop Dudley. But that denomination was just something I couldn't grasp onto after I started getting into it more. And I'm one of these guys, and I always say I'm non-denominational, because my thoughts are this, and I could be wrong on this, but denominations to me are the work of Satan. It causes division among God's people. So I go to every church, any denomination, and I don't have a problem with it. Okay? Anyway, in my walk in there, I remember the gentleman that came up one day and he said, you know, you cannot go to heaven unless you accept Christ into your life personally. You have to talk with God, and you have to ask His forgiveness, and you have to express your desire to follow Him. And I did it. I went back to my cell one night, and I got down on my knees. And I could do that then. I can't do it now. It was a concrete floor. And I prayed, and I prayed. And I tried to make deals with God. It doesn't work. You don't deal with God. But in that prayer, I gave my life, and I said I'd live for Him. And then I prayed something else. I prayed, Lord, I don't want much in this life. I want to live comfortably. I want to have a family of my own. I want to have a wife. I said, I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be famous. But just let me live comfortably. I didn't know it then what would happen. It was just one of those things I prayed. But I found this verse a few years later, and it opened my eyes. Verse 37 of Psalm says, take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Bam. I continued to walk with Christ through my prison time. When I got out, I was attending Assemblies of God Church, and I walked with him for quite a while. And then as life goes, when you leave prison, sometimes you start going backwards again. You've got to stay focused, folks, because if you don't, you're going back to prison. But I didn't, and there I went through one of them valleys I was talking about, where I just kind of left God behind. And I forgot the things I'd said, the promises I'd made. But God didn't. You know, God doesn't forget, and He doesn't forget the desires of your heart, even if you don't know that them are actually the desires of your heart. So I got married once, and then my first wife left me for my best friend. And it was a hard time. And about 6 months later, I suppose I met another lady. And I'll tell you what, the Lord's got a sense of humor on Him. And He knows exactly what we need. Because that lady said, we're going to get married. She said, I want to get married. She said, I'm at an age, I'm not going to screw around. And you know what? I married her. And you know what? My wife is still with me today. 32 years later. And when I say God has got a sense of humor, here's why. Because we've got to take God holding her up for her to hold me up. I'm no easy task, folks. I've got a background, and I've got more baggage than anybody on the street. But when my wife met me, God must have just put His hand on her shoulder and said, I'll be with you. This guy's going to need you, and I need you to stay with him. And she's done that. And so I'm very happily married, and we've been through some rough times. Like I said, I'm not an easy guy to get along with, and she could have left me several times, and she didn't. We're fortunate. We have two sons. The good Lord gave me my wife. He gave me my children. Both graduated from college, which I never got to do. Both have more than one degree. In fact, I think Austin's on his third degree now. So he's just a full-time student. But they're wonderful children. My oldest son is a teacher. He's now getting his administrative degree in teaching. So I've been blessed. Am I rich? Not in any sense of the word. Do I live comfortably? I do. You know what? And that's enough. I live in a mobile home, folks. If you think I have this big castle, I don't. I live in a mobile home. And I just built it last year. I built a wood shop because I like to carve. I got into carving. And my wife said, look, you're not going to do that in the garage and get it all dusty and dirty, because that's not what garages are for. You know what? For your wife to sit in and watch television. She takes the dogs in there and watch television. So we built a shop out there, and I can do a little wood carving, and I put a deck on it this year. That's all you need in life. Your family. God. in a peaceful place. So God has been with me. I follow Him. Am I perfect? I'm not. God knows that. And I tell you this, folks, I don't believe I could ever be perfect. Because if I was perfect, I couldn't do the ministry I do. I couldn't go out and work with men and women coming out of prison because I wouldn't know what they're feeling. I wouldn't know how hard it is to make it coming out. We give out gift cards to those that go to the banquet that are homeless then. We give out gift cards so that at the holidays they can have food. That's a hard time. Sometimes we've given Christmas presents for the kids. We get calls, and my oldest son is really good. He works at Whittier High School over there. And he called me up this past, what was that, May? He said, we have this little boy, he's from overseas, and he's wearing pink socks. They're his sister's socks. He told me that. And he said, he's wearing a girl's coat. He said, Dad, we got to do something for this kid. He just doesn't have clothes or anything. Well, we get donations from Hope or Trust for our ministry. And they're to provide clothes and clothing for people. So we have integrated some of that into our ministry, where we will help other ones, not just those that are in prison. But I think, and we pray about it, this is God's deal. Why should we limit God? Why should we limit what God wants us to do? As long as we're staying focused on our ministry, if somebody else needs a hand up now and then, we should do it. We should always have compassion. We should always have love. We should always care about others. This ministry does that. This ministry will continue to do that for as long as I'm here. I will continue to walk with God. I will continue to bore God each night when I pray. And I say that because I say the same prayer every night. You're going to laugh at me, but it's okay. Because when I pray, I say, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, Lord, I pray my soul you'll take. We learn that as a child. But then I add so much more to it because I'm not perfect. And because I know that daily, I probably sin. I have to ask forgiveness nightly for that. And I have to ask God nightly to make me a better man than I am today. It doesn't seem like much. But you know what? I don't sleep until I do that. It gives me peace. And I know that should I die, the Lord's there with me. He's by my side. And when that day comes, He'll be by my side. Last year, I was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease. I'll tell you what, my wife will tell you, I was a wreck. I thought I was going to die at any time. And at that time, I got this little tattoo because I kind of like it. But it says, God is greater than the highs and lows. It's a constant reminder to me that whether I'm up here or I'm down here, God's always with me. And He's with you. Folks, I told you I'd been in prison. I told you I had a record. I haven't given my testimony for some time because when a guy leaves prison, he wants to forget that part of your life. You know what? God doesn't ever want me to forget that part of my life. It's part of my story. And that's why I tell that to you today. In 1993, not many folks get this, but in 1993, I went back before the Board of Pardons and Paroles, and I asked for a pardon. And at the time, Governor Jankla was in. I was recommended by the Board of Pardons and Paroles for a pardon, and I received it. God never leaves us or forsakes us. He gave me that. He's given me so much in my life. You know, I had no skills, but in prison I got a GED. When I came out, I started as a cook. I was making $3.65 an hour. I left that, went into another trade. Then I went into sales for 18 years, and I was pretty darn good at it. And then I was at First Baptist Church, and they said, would you come to work as a lead custodian for us? I said, wait a minute, I got this nice paying job. I'm a salesman. I wear nice clothes. But you know what? I was led to go there. At that time, I had just renewed my walk with Christ. I remember I was working with a guy called Captain Bob Bradbury. He was an evangelist. And Iva Spoonamore, and she's still over in Sioux Falls. But the company I worked for, which was Shipley's Laundry and Cleaners over there, or Serval Towel and Linen Supply, they were Christians. And I remember walking in there on April 18th, of 1998. And on my desk was a little note, and I always kept shoes underneath my desk. And on that note, someone had written, it's time to put both feet back in with your walk with Christ. You've been walking with one foot in, one foot out. It's time to put both feet in. I went home, I kind of chuckled and laughed about it. I went back to the office in the middle of the rain, and I prayed. And little did I know, well, a few minutes later, Iva Spoonamore came in. She was an evangelist. And she said, I was driving home, and God told me to come back here because somebody needed me to pray with them. I don't know how, but it happened. God's got a sense of humor. So we did. I began walking. I did street evangelism. I started working with the homeless. And then, of course, I got into the church. And the church actually, I don't know, a year or two later, the church licensed me as a pastor for my ministry. And then a year after that, I was ordained by Tom Stammen Ministries. And I don't have a church or anything. I'm a lay pastor. It's a means to an end. I can go into the prison if I need to. I'd probably have to renew my credentials now. But God has opened doors up for me that He's would never ever been opened before. I'm a maintenance man for a school during the week. I love it. And about 7 years ago, I took a chance and became a security officer. Now, if you have a record, you can't be a security officer. So the good Lord kind of knew what He was doing. I work with my son. My youngest son is also a security officer at a Vera hospital. And it's a blessing to be able to work with him. He's a little overprotective sometimes, but it's wonderful that God has been there through my highs, through my lows. Every time I've needed something, or every time I thought I'm going to fail, God just picks me back up and says, keep going. And that's my story, folks, to today. I live for Christ, both good and bad. He accepts me for who I am. He knows I'm not perfect. He says none of us are perfect. None of us can make it to heaven on our own. Only by His grace are we forgiven. and I will believe that till the day I leave this world. And I will forever be blessed. I am forever grateful for the life I've been given, for the family I've been given, for the wife that stands behind me. And sometimes she just shakes her head, but she stands beside me and she encourages me and it keeps me going. Folks, I want to thank you for letting me come and share my story today. I wish for each of you God's blessings. I wish that when you're down, God will send someone your way to pick you back up. When you think there is no hope, that you will look around and find that there is hope in everything around you. In the grass, in the leaves, in the whispers of the leaves. As a bird sings, find hope there. Grab onto it. And realize that this is from God for your enjoyment, for your life, until He takes you home. Thank you. More prayer before I go, just for you folks. Lord, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. Thank you for these folks. They're so gracious that humble me by who they are. Lord, fill them with compassion if they don't have it, with grace if they do. Lord, teach them to forgive. Lord, teach them to enjoy life, to enjoy the freedoms that we have in America. Lord, we give you the glory, we give you the honor, and we give you the praise. Amen. Thank you. Don?